Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I don't know, but this is your house, isn't it?
Wow. A surreal start to go. That's pretty good.
Well, I see, what you did see you next week.
Bye, that was great. Yeah. Tack för att du hörde på. Mm.
This, we struggled to find the just perfect, correct time to do this podcast in terms of energy and so on.
How are you this morning?
It is a morning.
Yeah, it is. There's no good answer. I think just show up. I'm sorry, I haven't edited last week's podcast.
We're very sorry for all the people that haven't heard the last week's podcast that isn't out
I'm
yet.
I'm actually not that sorry. When I listen to it, when I edit it, I'm a little bit concerned that it has zero substance. We'll find out.
But perhaps, have you been busy with something?
Have I? Yeah. Well, a couple of things. We had my little brother-in-law, who's still here, actually. He's staying for a week.
Is he in the studio?
No. he is not in the studio. He's, I think, fast asleep in bed. He's not a morning person, I think it's fair to say. So that's obviously, that takes up time, having visitors. And the other thing is we've been dipping our toe in the buying property in Norway market, which is delightful and terrifying.
And which we will talk about now, I guess.
Yeah, if you like. Without further preamble, unless you want to talk about something else. Actually, no, I should go back to the little brother thing.
So you said little brother, but is he a child or
not anymore? He's I think in his early 20s, but like that's appreciably younger than us.
He is a child then.
Oh, harsh. No.
Look at me, 32.
Yeah, look at you, grandpa.
Kids today.
Yeah.
Just Ubering around with their apps. And their social media and the strive for perfection.
And their Nintendos and their, yeah. One of the things that we did was that my husband found out there was going to be a live showing of Mamma Mia, like an outdoor cinema, Ute Kino thing. And little brother-in-law loves musicals. So we surprised him. We said, let's go. So we took like camping chairs and we sat outdoors with lots of other people and watched Mamma Mia. And I think you know me, you know that I'm not the world's biggest musicals fan, but I was like, no, I shall be open to this. I like ABBA, like who doesn't like ABBA, seriously? But
do you still like ABBA?
Well, perhaps slightly less. So most musicals, right, they're based on a fairly flimsy premise. There's kind of some story and the songs are kind of shoehorned in. And they've like managed to make this even worse by basing a movie around some songs that already existed. It's the flimsiest premise for a film I've ever seen. And it's really, really dull. And I was just not engaged at all. And that's not why I'm going to do it. That's not really why I'm bringing it up. I'm just mentioning this. Well, it's like I really went into it with my mind open and boy, was I disappointed.
But you now have brought it up. What kind of musicals have you seen?
Well, we talked about this before, right? So I've seen a whole bunch of Disney stuff. I've seen a few things on stage, like Carousel and things like that. And I don't know, like random stuff growing up.
It seems like you only seen bad ones.
Well, Carousel's like not the world's best movie or anything, musical or anything. But I feel sure that there is probably a musical out there that I would like. Maybe I would like Les Mis, I don't know. But this is a terrible musical and a terrible film. They should be ashamed of themselves. Clearly no one is. Sorry, little brother, if you ever listen to this. I'm glad you like it. It's just not my bag. But the thing was, right, Allsang, right, because you've got a whole bunch of people outside, Norwegians, sitting around watching, you know, watching a musical that's a film and singing along, right? There's even lyrics across the bottom of the screen, so every time a song starts, you know, you get the lyrics. So even if you're not, like, right there with the lyrics, you can sing along. It was surprisingly muted. I expected more. In a country where Allsang, you know, like all getting together and singing outside is like a thing, the mood was sort of fairly low-key. And I think I expected more. Had that happened in, like, London or Manchester in the UK, it would have been bordering on rowdy. There would have been huge, huge enthusiasm, and this was extremely kind of low-key. So I don't know if not a lot of people knew about it or what.
I think you perhaps... are you cherry-picking now? Because I got some snaps this weekend from this apartment crawl, which weirdly seems thematically apt to mm-hmm. go into now. But
indeed.
And there were some Allsang there, and I guess muted isn't the right word.
No, but you've got to say, right, our colleagues are perhaps not stereotypically Norwegian, all of them. I don't know, maybe they are.
Are they not Norwegians enough for you?
I don't know. People keep telling me how quiet and self-deprecating Norwegians are. And then if you go out with the right bunch of people from our office, it's not that. It's a small riot. It was delightful. It was a really nice evening. Yes, that's a fair counterpoint. It's that we had a very exuberant Friday evening crawling around various people's houses that we work with. And well, you didn't, but I did. And I took my little brother-in-law as well, and he had a very good time. And I think that was more his level of enthusiasm than the Mamma Mia, which was sort of quiet. I tried. I really tried. I was like, I should be open to this. Oh, so disappointed. So disappointed. I actually thought, right, I was like, quite early in the film, I was like, okay, this is set on an island. Wouldn't it be great if this turns into an Agatha Christie and someone just starts bumping off all of these people? Because most of them are terrible human beings. And it would be great if they just start dying one by one. And that would be my kind of movie, but sadly it did not go that way.
This is the one with Pierce Brosnan, isn't it?
It is. He might be the only person in it, the only character in it who was like... even sort of like a human being. Most of the, like, everyone was just people like I would not want to spend any time with. Actually, the Colin Firth character turns out to be okay in the end, I guess. But
it even got, it has Meryl Streep, isn't she?
I know, she's perfectly competent. It's just a terrible movie. That's not her fault.
Well. Could blame her.
No. She's great. She's great. She does exactly what she needs to do. It's just I was unmoved. Something else I wanted to mention. Ah, never mind. Yeah.
So I guess this is...
Everyone hates me now because everyone loves Mamma Mia.
So this isn't your cultural pick of the week?
I don't know. It's like my anti-cultural pick of the week.
You should actively not see it. You should avoid it by all means.
The thing is, everyone loves it. Like, I recognize that I'm almost entirely alone in this. Have you seen it?
Go to your local video renting store and rip out the tape from the VHS.
Does anyone still rent videos anymore?
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm slightly surprised.
You are? Because I'm a musical buff.
Well, you like that kind of thing. Yeah, I'm actually genuinely a little bit surprised that you haven't seen it.
Because if you like musicals, you have to like them all, right? Well, actually,
do you like ABBA?
Most people... It's fine. It's not what I put on, but... Sure.
But you like musicals-ish. You like camp-ish. Like...
That's true. But ABBA is... I wouldn't say it's camp... Not truly.
There are more camp things in life, but like it's an 8 on the camp scale, I think.
This is difficult because there's certainly a lot of great deal of competence that goes into making that kind of music and producing it.
I'm with you. I don't put it on at home, but I think it's extremely competently produced.
And in the context of its time, more research is needed, I guess.
Oh, man, did you just, like, skip the entire thesis?
Yeah. One thesis at a time.
I was going to say, this is a big week for you.
Yeah, I guess.
You want to talk about it?
There isn't much to talk about yet, but, well, I rekindled my thesis work.
Right. It felt like a kind of a declaration of sorts. You wrote a declaration of sorts.
Yeah, I always write a declaration of sorts.
It was good. It was, you know, I liked it. I'm very glad that you're getting back on the horse.
But the main feature is that I pivoted my thesis from this monograph, big, huge thing, to four papers that I believe will be useful.
That's great. I mentioned this to my husband. He was like, does everyone not just submit a thesis as publications here? Because in the UK you can do either, but it's more common to write what I guess you would call a monograph, where you write a summary of the research that's not ready for publication in itself.
Yeah, it depends on your field, I guess. But as always, within the humanities, people tend to write a monograph, this book. Yeah. Because they require more space for their thinking.
I like the economical approach. Yeah. I didn't do it myself, but I like it.
You cannot.
So if you publish these papers,
genius within the format of the paper. You have to have excurs. Yeah. No. I'm sorry. But it is becoming more. I think more students or PhD students in humanities now submit papers instead because of the pressure on having published research.
Right. Yeah. It reduces the need to kind of write everything twice, right?
But before, I guess, before they kind of did both. So they would write this monograph whilst publishing sort of articles and papers. Which also meant that they tended to use a longer time to finish up the PhD. Mm.
That's pretty common in the UK, I think, that way of doing it. So I like that you're publishing a lean thesis. It's good. Well, it's not even a thesis, I guess. It's a lean submission. Nice.
Well, time will show.
Mm. Are the papers already published, any of them, as they stand?
No, so I took much of the drafts and chapters and stuff I've already done. And I have now just planned out how these could work as sort of standalone articles.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Good job. I know it's not done yet, but like, you know, that's extremely
cool.
It's
so not done yet.
Yeah, we'll fix that. Yeah. We'll fix that. Nice.
So, apropos huge life decisions.
Yeah, house buying. Done it before in the UK, 15 years ago, give or take. Bit different here. But, like, I remember so little because it was 15 years ago. I remember so little about it. Yeah.
So, what did you buy 15 years ago, if you remember?
I bought a very small one-bedroom flat in Manchester at a time when it was still available, still affordable to do that. I think if I'd waited a couple of years, it wouldn't have been. And we lived there for nearly 10 years. And it was pretty small. One of the bedrooms was so narrow that if you were about 6 foot tall, I'm not that tall, but if you were about 6 foot tall, that's 1.80 meters, I guess, to you continental types, you could actually stand with a fingertip on each wall. It was that narrow. So it was not the world's largest flat.
And was buying this flat in Manchester, how would one do that? I guess things may have changed since these 15 years, but...
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, my experience is not recent, but you find it on the internet, which it has in common with Norway. But then you ring up and say, I would like to view this flat at a time of my choosing, which is not what happens in Norway. In Norway, generally speaking, if a flat is new or any property is new on the market, right, they put it out. They say, right, viewing times are at this hour on the Sunday and this hour on the Monday evening. And if you don't make those, then you're probably not in it. So it's very prescriptive. Whereas the one in Manchester, I just rang up the estate agent and went, hey, that looks kind of good. Coincidentally, it was in the same building on the same floor as I was already living on, so that was extremely handy. Big apartment building. And went to see it, thought, yeah, I can work with this. It needed some work, but that was fine. In the history of like any property anywhere, I've never looked at a property and gone, that is absolutely perfect. I would not change anything. It never is everything optimal.
Do you have some sort of, is there a folk wisdom of things you have to check for on such a viewing?
It's a bit hard to say. Like, I think knowing what I know now, I probably didn't check those things at the time. I think I was like, is this a livable space? Because everything else gets sort of revealed in the surveyor's report, right? if you want, you can go around and check things like the water pressure, which I now know to do. So that, like, this dribble doesn't come out of the shower, because that's just quite a sad experience.
Also, weak water pressure is the worst.
Yeah? Have you lived with weak water pressure? You seem like this is as if we opened a sore here.
Yeah, I have, and that's the worst, because you need some pressure to do stuff, I guess, to get the dirt off.
How dirty do you get? I guess you have horses, so potentially pretty dirty. Yeah. All the usual stuff, like, do these windows open? If it's a south-facing flat, is this going to be a greenhouse, or do the windows actually open enough, or, like, is there shade in some way so that it doesn't become, like, 35 degrees in there in the summer, you know, stuff like that. What else happened? We bought it, and then... Workmen, before we moved in, we spent not very much money, I think, by any standard, getting people to knock the ceilings out to full height, because it had been previously, it had been sort of renovated from like a 100-year-old building, but they'd lowered all the ceilings artificially, which is quite a common thing to do, I think, in the sort of mid-20th century to save people on heating bills. So they'd actually... They'd lowered the ceiling to such an extent they covered up half the window. So, like, that had to stop, right? So we got our kind of 2.5 meter high ceilings back, and another window, which was cool. And they did other stuff. They put like a bed deck in, and I was like, right, okay, if we just move a couple of walls around here, then you can get straight into the bathroom over here, and we get one square meter back, and you know, like, and the cupboards. Another square meter, so we got 2 square meters for free, if you like, by moving stuff around. But then you have to go through the permission. You have to kind of go through the planning department to move interior walls around. I don't know if you have to do that here, but you certainly do there.
The permission, that sounded like a thing.
Yeah, that was, I can't language this morning, it's very early.
So you took all your savings in a brown paper bag and you just handed it over to the apartment owner.
Yeah, not exactly. Yeah. Now you've got to go. Everything goes through the realtor, right? Like the estate agent, it would be called in the UK. It's a bit surreal when you like write a thing, you sign a thing saying that you're going to pay, you know, like, I can't remember what the mortgage was. I think it was something like £76,000 or something, which is like a dribble today. And you're going to, like, you're committing yourself to that much money, even though it's mostly not your money, right? Even though it's mostly the bank's money.
But you did have to go to the bank and ask first, right? Or...
Yeah, I don't remember very much about this. Genuinely do not. Like, as I say, it was a long time ago. I remember there being lots of fiddling around, like with what kind of, some people wouldn't insure you, like if the building went over four stories high, they just they wouldn't give you a mortgage. It had a tar roof. It was an old building, but it kind of like the very top of the roof had been done in tar paper, and you had to like declare that, and all kinds of stuff. It's a bit weird. And you have to say like how close you are to like a river and things like that. There's lots of flooding in the UK where people build on floodplains and then like the houses flood and then everyone gets ruined, but the company who put up the buildings doesn't really, they don't care. They just want to get paid for construction. So I don't know if that happens here.
No, not as much, I think. And there's really strict regulations now on new buildings. Tech 10. It is perhaps a universal standard, I don't know. But
okay, yeah. I have no idea. What is it?
In Norwegian, it's called Byggteknisk Forskrift. So it is the technical specifications of a new building. There's always... it has to be universally... accessible, and there's a load of stuff that has to do with preserving heating and so on.
Good standards.
Yeah, standards.
I guess. Standards, punctum. The building that I live in currently, that we rent from, is the standards extraordinary. Like, we didn't use our heating. I think we turned it on for a couple of hours in November, and then we just didn't turn on the heating all winter. We have flats above and below, which helps. They're doing the work for us.
Yeah, I think most modern Norwegian houses are pretty well isolated. Insulated.
Insulated,
and
indeed.
And isolated.
Many of them are isolated, yes. Indeed. You've bought a house, like, what's your experience been of buying a house here? Before I get into, like, I guess the viewings and all of that jazz, what do you remember? How recent was it?
So, we, well, she, my wife, then girlfriend, bought an apartment, and that was, man... 10 years ago.
Wow.
I think. And so I moved out from my sort of student collective thing and into this apartment, which also were a sort of small top apartment thing that we optimized fully for space.
Did you do that yourself or have professional people come in and do it?
We did it ourselves and my father-in-law.
Nice.
So he's pretty handy and he helped us with the bathroom and so on. Yeah.
In the UK, I think we talked about this before, but in the UK, like if you're going to fiddle with the electricals, you have to be like a certified professional, so... Anything that involves kind of moving wires around, you basically have to get someone else in to do.
Yeah, now he is a certified electrician.
Right, you mentioned this before. That is handy.
But, well, there's a footnote because he is certified for marine sort of boats and stuff, the huge ships. So technically he can't do it on land, even though the stuff he does is more difficult.
If you rigged a sail to the building, would that qualify it?
Sure. I'm getting technically a boat. Python image in my brain now.
But, yes, same.
But yeah.
And the technical... but that's not where you live now, right? Oh,
no,
sorry.
No, it's not. And technical work or the electricity work that was there before was pretty shitty. So.
Right.
He actually improved it.
Hmm.
Yeah. We lived in this apartment for, I don't remember how long. I think it was 4 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought a house.
How come?
Mainly because it was cheap and close to the stables and close to potential work.
That's cool.
So it was this little, I guess, cute house where in the same town I live now, besides the river, that didn't tend to flood.
You hope?
It was a salmon river, actually.
Wow.
So I could sort of stand on my sort of, what is the thing that every Norwegian has outside of their houses called?
Terrace? Balcony?
Yeah, it's a terrace. It's a pretty huge terrace.
Nice.
This is a thing in Norway. We build huge terraces.
Yeah.
Plotting, I think, it's called.
It's called what?
Plotting.
Okay. What happened to terrasse?
The taxonomy of outside flooring.
Outside spaces, yeah, like balcony, terrasse.
Because a balcony is a rather small thing, right?
Right. And it's suspended. There's an implication that it's kind of an extension that is not, I don't know, some of the legs go all the way down to the ground, but yeah.
And terrasse tends to be a bit larger.
Yeah.
Does it have to be
underground?
When
does a balcony stop being a terrace? No, I don't think so. You can have like roof terraces. I think if you've got a really, really big balcony, it starts being a terrace.
But when you have this sort of terrace that just built on the on sort of over the garden sort of or the outside.
In English that would be a deck.
Yeah, it's a deck, of course. So plotting is a deck, and Norwegians are building decks.
Mm. Do they have pigs in the decks or on the decks? I guess.
I guess on the grills, on the decks.
Because you could always be grilling.
Always be grilling.
Big grill weekend, this.
Yeah. And so this was actually a terrace because it was sort of in the air. And I could technically fish from it, even though I didn't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But we bought this house. It was a rather small house. And it has had some history, actually, because she who had lived there most of its time, so during war times, she actually helped Russian prisoners of war to escape.
Wow.
And I have to do some Googling now to check my history. But I think the Russian sort of president, Khrushchev? No.
Khrushchev.
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 He visited Norway, and he gave her a medal.
Wow. How did you find this out? Was she selling this to you?
And this is... no, she wasn't. That's another story. But we found that out by just living there and having people pass by and telling us.
Wow.
And also I had a visitor that this lady, she was kind of I can't language either.
So
they were this person that had played there a lot when she was a child and so on, that now live on the eastern part of Norway, that's just visited to see the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is this common to sort of move into somewhere in Norway and then to be told stories about who was there before?
I don't think it's common. But it apparently may happen. And no, we didn't buy it from her. we bought it from a British entrepreneur, actually.
Okay.
And his name was Peter Gribben.
Sorry, I missed the... You cut out. Scott did a robot thing. Peter who?
Gribben.
Doesn't sound very British.
No. it's in Norwegian, it sounds like a villain's name. Because
why?
A grib, isn't that the same in English? Yeah, a jib.
Like, I'm not getting this. A jib is a part of a boat, huh?
No, that kind of jib. The bird, the vulture.
Oh, I've never heard it called a jib before. Okay.
Yeah, so grib.
Is it gribben? Is that a grib?
Grib.
It's a vulture.
Grib,
oh my God.
It's a vulture.
Why would you even contemplate buying a house, buying anything from someone whose surname is Vulture?
Yeah,
like,
because
everything
that
could go wrong.
Well, yeah, and it did. Because...
Oh no, really?
Yeah. So he had hired some people,
heavies
that I don't think were sort of professionals to renovate this house, and yeah, we discovered some stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
For example, the outer sort of what do you call the outside of house?
The outside, the cladding? It depends. Cladding is usually a thing that you stick on, like tiles or...
I guess
this is a very philosophical question. I can't answer it. What? Like, what's it actually covered with?
Sort of planks.
Render?
The planks. Is the house.
Exterior? If there's a word, I can't think of it.
Because in Norwegian, it is kledning, which sounds like cladding. So this wooden cladding, the planks.
Yeah, but like the wood is the house. Like, cladding is usually something that, like, you've put the structure up and then you just kind of put
extra.
Yeah,
but the wood isn't the house, because the house is inside the cladding. Because the house is timber or whatever, and the cladding covers that again, so...
Let's say cladding. I got nothing else.
Yeah.
Shingles is when it's tiles. Anyway.
Yeah, so these planks were fastened with the kind of... what is words, man?
sorry, this is so stretching the, your
So you have the staples that you use for the moldings, right? These thin little things
that you use to attach moldings to.
Yeah.
Like walls or whatever.
Like inside moldings. Like this thin.
Oh god, like interior stuff.
Yeah. So they used that on the exterior stuff. So I had to go and do that. So it didn't fall off.
Oh my god.
So we, there were different stuff that we had to fix.
Yeah.
And we tried to get money from him, and well, there were quite a lot of other people that tried to get money for him, so.
See, when you say entrepreneur, what you really mean is scoundrel. There's a kind of recognizable archetype in the UK, I don't know if this happens here, where you invite, you get a workman to come in, like maybe you've just moved into a new house and you want a new kitchen because the old one is just, you know, whatever. But like whenever you get a professional person who works on this stuff to come in, they come in and they look at whatever there is that you want changing or replacing or fixing or whatever. And there's this kind of indrawn breath through the teeth, and then maybe like followed by the word... cowboys or something like that, right? And like the longer, the kind of the more audible the indraw of breath, the more it's going to cost you. But they almost, like, professionally, they almost have to diss like whatever work happened before. It's familiar.
Yeah.
Oh man. So wow. Well, I hope that doesn't happen to us now, I'm afraid.
Well, as long as your realtor is named
Something nice.
Yeah.
Don't buy a house from a vulture title.
So yeah, but we learned some things.
Yeah. Did you learn other things that you haven't mentioned so far?
When the lawyer called us and told us that he had to foreclose our sort of estate or something. No.
Isn't foreclosure when you basically go, I can't upkeep this anymore, and the bank has to take it, and
That was the
they get all
case.
the money and the house, kind of thing?
And we were okay. And this was the same person, right? So there's this thing called in Norwegian heftelser, and this you have to know about liens. Can that be right?
Oh God, I can never get my head around this. Is this to do with that other people have invested in that as like a bond or a part of a bond or something in that
Yeah,
property?
stuff like that. So foregoing, I guess, agreements or something, stuff that goes into this estate or whatever. And I guess there was a confusion about that. So this lawyer believed that he could sell this estate to have the damages to pay, but he couldn't, fortunately, because it was
Because you've bought
it was
fair and
sold
square,
without,
right?
yeah.
How long?
But
How
that
long
was a
after the
day.
sale? Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Wow. Like, how long after you'd bought it? In quotes, bought. Do you even own it really now? I mean, like, is there a possibility that someone could just rock up one day and go, yeah, sorry, this is mine?
Was that a question, or just sort
I don't know. Was that a question?
but yeah, so we lived there for a couple of years, and we had our eye on another house, actually, that was on sale, but it was too sort of expensive at the time for us, and then it went away. And 1 year after, it came back much cheaper. So we,
What happened?
well, time had, well, because it was bought by another entrepreneurial firm that wanted to build apartments on the estates around this house. And these were locals, so they didn't want to tear it down because of reasons. I guess sentimental reasons or something. Because it is the old house to the bank chief in the town I live in, and so on. So it also got some history to it. So yeah. I still haven't found the bird money. There
Ah,
are,
one day, just keep
yeah.
digging. Is this what you were really doing in the cellar? It wasn't renovation, it was
Actually,
just trying to dig up
I did,
underneath.
because under the flooring I found a hatch, like in Lost.
More. What's under the hatch?
And I actually spent a couple of hours trying to open it because it was rusted, and so on. And excitement.
Yeah.
And when I finally got it opened, okay, this is where the sewer meets. It goes out of the house. So that was anticlimactic.
Disappointing.
But yeah, now I know that. But
It's good that you tried. It's like a 1 in 100 chance that would have been just a big pot of money or something.
yeah, that's what I'm telling myself. But but yeah, so this
Metaphor, it
house
burns.
got on the market again, and we thought, well, let's. And this time we had to call them and ask to see it because they didn't have sort of these viewings. So that happens too in Norway. You can actually call the seller and ask for a private showing.
Nice.
So yeah, so we did that, and it apparently hadn't got any work done on it since the 70s. Well, it had a new kitchen, but yeah. Also, there was also the old lady, the widow after this banking chief that lived there. And all
did she come free with the house, or?
Actually, that is a thing as well. It used to in Norway, you had this thing called kårebolig, and you still see this in sort of the listings, especially in more rural areas. So before, you could buy this farm or something, and you were required to house the retired farmers and keep them with food and stuff.
Do you own them now? Like, how does that work?
No, they own you very much because
right,
they got all the rights and you have all the obligations. And this, I guess this is a precursor to the welfare system or something, but yeah.
Wow.
So you could risk to have... and to keep this housing for retired farmers, and they were, could be a bit demanding, or and so on.
Hmm.
So there
this is a whole thing.
Yeah, but this house didn't have such a thing. We offered quite a lot of. So it was, I think, the sales price suggestion were, I don't remember this, but we offered like $500,000 under the suggested price. Just thought, damn it, let's give them sort of a what in Norwegian is called a skambud.
Yeah.
An offer of shame.
Why did you do that? Because, like, my worry about doing something like that, even though it's a bit tempting, is that they might be insulted and not sell to you.
Yeah, but there weren't any other people that wanted it, it seemed like.
Yeah, because that's the difference between your situation and my situation, I guess.
Because they didn't even have an agent, entrepreneur firm, they just showed it themselves, and I said, okay, apparently you have to redo a lot of stuff. This is a project. Mm. It has potential. Yeah. But no secrets here, right? Which also was kind of, yeah. And we had a carpenter that went through to sort of have an idea of all the things that had to be done.
Hmm.
And we were allowed to even cut into the walls to see what was behind and stuff like that.
Wow, is this a horror movie now? This is taking a sudden turn.
So we really checked this house out. And, and we gave this offer, and they said, sure, okay.
Cool.
We offered you free parking spaces in the new apartment housing, but now you only get two. But then we have a deal.
Oh man.
Yes, and so suddenly we had bought another house. So now we had two houses, and a lot of stress.
So were you living in the one house while doing up the other house, or what happened? Or do you still have two houses?
No. So we lived in the one house whilst redoing the other, which is recommended, sort of, because you don't want to live in a renovating project. And, and we had this kind of time limit, because the bank helped us out with the mortgage and all that stuff. So we had a kind of grace period, right, before we had to pay full... the full thing on both, right?
Right.
And so we had a kind of time limit and have to be effective in redoing the other house so that we could move in and sell the other. and we struggled a bit to sell the first house, actually.
Why was that?
Partly because of the market, of course, and a pretty lousy realtor agent. His heart wasn't in it. Yeah.
Can you sack a realtor?
Yeah, you can.
In Norway, did you?
Yeah, we actually. Well, it was a mutual agreement. This doesn't work out. Perhaps you should try our competitor. It was really.
They
civil.
Said that to you.
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess he had some stuff in his personal life or something. He seemed very distracted. So yeah. But yeah, and we were lucky and found some buyers and pretty much sold it. We went pretty much even, I guess, on it.
If you sell for the same price as you bought that, though, like, you've basically had several years living rent-free there, right?
Yeah,
a profit for you.
Yeah, yeah. That's another way to see it.
My coffee cup is always half full.
Yeah. we teared... We pretty much threw out half of the house, teared down all the interior walls to the bone. It isn't made of bones. It is made of timber.
Good to know. Again, horror movie territory. Where do you live? This sounds frightening.
And redid all the plumbing and electricity and, yeah.
Yeah, I'm in awe of, like, the thoroughness of that, because...
Change all the windows. All 17 of them.
Oh, that's a lot of windows. Is it frightening carrying, like, handling kind of huge pieces of glass like that?
It isn't frightening, but...
Well, you know, you're, like, very aware that you could drop it and cost a lot of money, and, you know, they're probably pretty heavy, right?
They are. But most of them, you actually take out the glass part and just sort of fasten the frame, and then you just pop it back again.
Mm.
But yeah, of course.
Wow. I'm hoping our experience will be slightly less hands-on. Actually, we quite like a project. My husband would like somewhere that we can just move into and he never has to think about. I would have loved a project, but I think we have to go in his direction for him not to feel stressed by it.
So, did you hand in the offer?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I wanted to check that we actually had, like, money available. I wanted to move some money across from the UK. And I'm stuck in... I don't want this to turn into, like, rich people problems. God. But I'm stuck in a kind of weird 21st century problem, which is that in order to use a service to transfer money across, one of the things they want to do to verify my identification is they want a recent bill or credit card statement. And I don't have these things. Like, all our bills are included in our rent except for the electricity, which is in my husband's name. I got nothing. I literally cannot prove, like, what they want me to prove. So I think what I have to do is move the money to my husband and then he has to move it over.
Have you tried PayPal?
What?
Have you tried PayPal? No, I'm just kidding.
I hate PayPal. I'm using there's a very good service. See why I can't name it. Like, no one loses out, right? There's a thing called TransferWise, which allows you to kind of move money internationally, and they just do it at a time that's sort of financially optimal for them. So, like, you can wait a day or two, but they wait until the rate is more competitive, and then they move it, and it's way cheaper than how you would perhaps do it otherwise. But I can't prove my identity to a degree that's, like, satisfactory for them, so I guess I can't do it.
Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Well,
credit
card statement?
They want, like, the credit card statement or a recent bill, like the last 3 months, and I don't really have either of these because this is the 21st century.
Couldn't you just tell your bank in Norway to make something up? Or so give you a paper or whatever?
I don't know. I need to kind of bottom that out a little bit. I need to see if there's something I could print off from somewhere. But yeah, like, you know, this used to happen to us when we rented cars in the UK. Like, they would say, do you have like a recent, we need like three different kind of recent bills or bank statements or whatever. And as people have gradually gone over to digital or just stopped sending kind of bills, it just becomes harder and harder to verify stuff with this kind of proof. Because you just have fewer and fewer of these things. Hmm. Anyway, sidebar. No, we haven't. We'd like to put in a bid on the house today because we found a place that we really, really like and we went to see it yesterday. And my husband, who's like Mr. Cautious and like, let's just, you know, let's just be really clear about how we're going to deal with money, was just like, we left and he was just like, it's brilliant. I really want it. And I was like, right, you have to be okay. In order for this to work, you have to be okay with the outcome that we don't get the house. Otherwise, like, you know, otherwise bad things will happen. No, he's not just throwing caution to the wind, but he was unusually excited about it, which was quite sweet. Yeah, so we have to, this is a frightening thing, so haven't done this yet, but I can make a bid. I can make a bid from an app. I can press a button in an app on my phone and make a formal bid, fill in some information about myself, verify my identification, make a bid, and thereafter, if the bidding goes to several rounds, if there are more people interested, it goes via SMS. And I'm terrified of that. I'm not actually terrified of the bidding. If we lose it, I don't mind. If it goes over what we can afford, I don't mind. We'll find something. But the thought of, like, waiting around, right, for this SMS to come that says, now the bidding is at this, do you want to exceed that? And, like, the stress of having to do all those transactions. I've seen other people go through this, like colleagues, you know, have been buying flats the last few months. I'm just like, I'm not really looking forward to that part. I actually don't, like, I'm very chilled about it, you know, like, if we don't get it, we'll get something else sometime, and that's fine. This is a lovely flat, I would love it, but if we don't get it, it's okay. But it seems like it's just setting everyone up for a very, very tense period of, what, like, 24 hours? These things resolve really quickly, right? It just goes round and round and round until everyone else gives up.
Yeah, so I seem to remember a week ago that somebody in the Hjem og Bolig Slack channel announced that the Norwegian system were pretty chill.
I think it is really chill. It's just that there's going to be a period of, like, honestly, what I'm most concerned about is if I was at leisure, right, it would be fine because I've got nothing else to do than just sort of wait and go, right, okay, is that more than I want to pay for this thing? But I'm just realizing that what's actually going to happen is I'm going to be in meetings, I'm going to be trying to do my job, and people are going to be sending me SMSs. I'm not really looking forward to that.
It's not only getting the SMSs, it's the game theory that you have to do in what
right.
should we offer now to sort of scare off the others, to mean show that we're serious, but also keep the price down. So,
yeah. Do you have any like top tips for that? Because I've been, you know, giving this obviously some thought.
I got nothing. I'm lousy at this. So I just told you the story of the house we bought last time.
Yeah.
There were no game theory going into that.
Right. Yeah. Other people, I think, will be interested in this. It's a nice flat. So I'm, yeah. Yeah, I guess we'll see. Maybe next week I'll have a story to tell you. Well, either way, I'll have a story to tell you, I guess. But yeah. But it's a bit weird. Like, we only really started thinking about this seriously a couple of weeks ago, and it was very easy to get a mortgage offer because we're very lucky and, you know, have jobs, and I guess we're from a country where we're regarded as, I don't know, whatever. My husband's like spent the entire week going, apparently I'm a very low credit risk. Well done.
But I have to take objection to, because I don't mean that you necessarily think this, but people seems to have the idea that banks are doing you a favor.
Oh, God, no.
Because people, oh, we got a loan, we are so happy. But you are the product, right?
So
we
oh,
pay
totally,
a lot of money.
Yeah.
So banks, yeah.
I know, breathe.
They have to be responsible. But
yeah, no, they should. They like the maximum, and the maximum that you can loan is fairly heavily capped, right? That you can borrow is
and that's,
capped.
That is because of the government, not the banks.
Yes, exactly.
The banks
the same
would
is
have
true
you
in
on the
UK.
Streets.
Oh yeah. No, it's not good. Like lending credit generally is needs to be probably even more strongly policed than it is. In the UK, there was a period where people could overborrow, and because the government of the day didn't regulate very heavily. And I think a lot of people took out mortgages that were then quite hard to pay. But then actually the economy kind of has been a bit soft the last few years. So maybe they're okay. But if it picks up again, they're screwed. But, you know, Brexit, so they're probably not screwed. I'm sure the economy will just loiter in the doldrums. I say that the exchange rate against the Norwegian kroner is a bit embarrassing for like it's a sort of low. I wish I'd been moving money around at a different time. But hey.
Oh, so this is the time to go to London.
This is the time to go to the UK. Yeah, absolutely. It's a good time for Norwegians to visit London. Oh, what was I going to say? Yeah, so you're kind of capped at how much you can borrow, which totally makes sense. And it was very, very quick to get an offer, which really surprised me. But then, like what's a little bit scary is that I have to read, well, we both have to read all the documentation, which, of course, is in Norwegian. And legal documentation...
Did you read...
Legal document... yeah, I do read documentation. But legal documentation in English is hard, and legal documentation in Norwegian is even harder, right? So... Because you've got to stop every sentence and look up a word to make sure, because there's, like, all these abstract nouns, you know, that you've never heard, that you can kind of guess, but, like, if you guess it wrong, maybe that's important. So, you know...
We didn't read the documentation.
Yeah, well, nice
well,
for you.
How much do you have to pay totally over how many years?
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But you've got to read, like, the report, right? The surveyor's report that talks about the state of the, you know, that the house is in.
Oh, I forgot about the loan documentation.
I read it, yeah. Well, I didn't, like, God, there's probably, like, a million T. I guess when we sign it for real, there'll be, like, 1,000 pages of small print, right?
Yeah,
I may not read that in its entirety. I should do.
If
anyone's listening to this, of course I read it.
The housing documents, the reports, they actually are good to read through, yeah. And what's even more difficult is to look for the things they don't say.
Like?
Stuff that, why don't they mention the X, Y, Z, right?
yeah. Was there something in particular that you thought they would, that would be typical
to... For
example,
this seems not to be the case for you guys, but why don't they mention anything about the insulation? Probably because there aren't any insulation.
Yeah, so like lies, that. Not lies of omission, but like, yeah, okay, that's definitely worth thinking about. I'm just realizing I didn't actually talk about the viewings, which is sort of interesting. Because it's a fixed time, everybody comes in that hour.
Yeah.
And you can tell, I guess, how much interest there is by how many pairs of shoes are outside the door. Because, of course, when you go to a viewing in Norway, you take off your shoes. Because no one would wear their shoes into the house. Particularly a house where someone is still living there, that would be, you know, that would be wrong and antisocial. So we went to two viewings yesterday, and the first one, there were a lot of shoes. Weirdly, this weekend was kind of characterized by lots of shoes outside people's houses, because this crawl that we went on of people's flats on Friday night was also, you know, like my little brother-in-law said, I've spent the entire visit here just taking my shoes off to get into other people's houses. It's actually true. The second one was a little bit quieter, but I took that as partly because it was away from the centre of town and partly because it's slightly more expensive, so presumably fewer people get to play. But it's sort of interesting. It was not as uncomfortable as I thought. Like, the first one was quite busy. It was quite a small flat. It was about 54? Yeah, it's quite small, actually, plus balcony. Square meters, and lots of people just milling around. So it's actually out of politeness. Like, if you're in a bedroom, people sort of wait until you're finished in there, and then they'll come in. They'll wait in the hall.
You finished in there?
Well, as in, you know, you're kind of looking around, you're sniffing around, you're like looking at the windows, looking at how much space is in there, and then, you know, you kind of, there's people outside respectfully waiting in the hallway until you have finished looking around that room, and then they step, you step out, they step in. You know, it's kind of, you know, it's very proper. It was a little bit less cramped in the second place, but it's still a little bit weird. It's not terribly weird, but it's a little bit weird looking around a place that you really might be quite interested in buying when your competitors are like right there. And of course, you have to be very polite.
This made me think of your question about Finn. I guess
go on.
If you find if you go to a showing and there's a lot of shoes outside, you should also look for a bowl of keys before really going in. But
you should look for what?
So there's this key bowl.
Bowl.
Anywho.
You know, the bowel is like the bit down from the colon, right?
Yeah, it seems thematically fitting. But
it's in the cellar and you've got to, like, 2 hours of trying to get it open. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Did they have any buns?
There were no buns.
No,
it wasn't,
cinnamon
I guess,
rolls.
That kind of showing. Is this a thing that they do sometimes to kind of make everyone feel good and have a cinnamon bun smell?
Yeah, did they decorate the apartment with lime? Just having
lime?
Bowls of lime around.
Like fresh limes cut open or like whole closed. Ones?
Whole.
Because they look fresh?
Yeah, it's a thing.
No, there was neither of these things, actually. I'm disappointed. Should I ask for another go?
Yeah, you should.
Hmm.
In Norway, we have these firms that offer to sort of style your apartment before this show.
Right.
Do you
it
have
seems
them?
Like a thing that... Yeah. I think they exist in the UK. I think almost no one uses them in the UK. Like, I think you have to be really quite rich to do them, to use them there. But I get the impression it's really common here. And if someone is choosing not to do it because it's expensive, then they will take a lot of time to kind of make the place look nice. Oh God, we haven't even talked about the standard. Sorry, say what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, because I think we will return to this topic next time.
Mm.
Because there may have been some developments and there's apparently a lot to cover.
Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think we have to move into the follow-up.
That's fine.
So, cliffhanger.
More on this as it develops, yeah.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
You probably have watched the last Game of Thrones episode, the final, and now there's a new cliffhanger. Will Chris buy the wall?
Just, like... To put this in perspective, one of my colleagues went to 70-odd viewings before she finally managed to buy a thing. I'm hoping that's not going to be us, but I'm just saying this is not a done deal. More on this next week. Ta-da! Follow-up. You're looking at the first line of follow-up going, what is this about? Okay, this one's on me. Here's the thing, right? In this podcast, I'm being pushed into a box that I'm not usually pushed into. So I end up being Hermione in this podcast way more than I'm comfortable with. Because I'm usually, like, not Hermione. I'm usually not good cop or straight cop. I'm usually the other person. But you're even more that person than I am. And so I end up being Hermione. And I listened back to like whichever episode of the podcast it was. And I was just like, oh God, I sound so, I don't know. I'm like the boring one in this podcast and that's painful. But I realize the only reason that's happening is you're even more me than I am. So that was a weird realization.
What do you mean?
Like... In any given conversation, I'm the one kind of like creeping around the edges, making sort of like weird off-the-cuff remarks that are only kind of tangential, but kind of like pulling the conversation into different directions or sort of taking tangents and stuff like that. But you do that even more than I do, and so I end up being the person who's like on the straight and narrow in the conversation, who's like predictable and normal and reasonable. And this is very uncomfortable territory for me.
Why is it uncomfortable?
Because I need to be that person.
Why
I'm usually
that
person.
Because
I don't like the idea that I'm Hermione.
Why don't you like the idea that you are Hermione?
Well, to be fair, she's quite awesome, but she's quite straight.
And you think it's bad to be straight?
It's just not where I usually end up. I'm usually the person making trouble around the edges.
And why is that? Why are you the person that makes the trouble?
Deeply flawed character, I guess.
Tell me about your childhood.
It was largely untroubled. Maybe people didn't tell me no enough. I don't know. I'm an only child, so clearly I'm awful.
You could come to Norway and reinvent yourself as this crazy cat, like on the wild side, punk. You don't just Brexit, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I just thought
perhaps
it was weird.
Perhaps you just have too much Marmite.
Nice segue. Did you read this?
I didn't.
There's a Science Daily post that suggests that Marmite could dampen your brain function. They followed people eating Marmite and people not eating Marmite for over a long period of time, and it seemed like those eating Marmite had like less excitable brain activity, I guess, is a kind of slightly flip way of describing it. I'm not sure how this could be applied usefully. I guess, like, if you're very anxious, maybe a lot of Marmite, I don't know. More research needed, I guess. But I worried about you after last time. I wondered if I'd done something to, after the last episode, well, the one before last, where we you ate Marmite. I worried that I could have inadvertently damaged your neuronal functioning or altered your neuronal functioning at the very least.
What I'm thinking is that Marmite seems to be a government conspiracy in order to make Britons make weird choices about their country.
Interesting. So you think the Brexit vote might, or the referendum might have gone the other way if it weren't for Marmite? As conspiracy theory goes, that's actually pretty good.
We have to look into state, sort of, if they have made some investments in the Marmite industry. Follow the money. Follow the Marmite.
The Marmite industrial complex. We need to get to the bottom of this. Awesome. I guess in response to our conversation about the fact that you had birds following your boat all the way to Scotland, David says, isn't this a solved problem? Listener David links to a story in The Independent about how Eric Cantona, the Eric Cantona, claims that when seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. I asked, did you throw sardines?
All your nerds out there, Eric Cantona was a football player.
Yes. Really? Are there people listening to this? Yeah, maybe there are a few people listening to this. Americans also. Not that kind of football. Soccer.
I can't believe that I didn't, because this I knew, that birds follow boats in hopes to get food. That is a scene that you will see on in every Norwegian coast town regularly. But I'm still not sure if this was the case when we were over, well, perhaps, because on the coastline you will have a pretty large flock of birds. But these birds seems more tagging along-ish.
Yeah.
Just hanging, hanging out, yeah.
Yeah. I sort of wonder, like, if they've learned that food happens around boats. Like, is it because people are throwing kind of fish guts overboard? Is it because the boat engine actually kills fish? Like, they get, some of them get caught in it, and then the kind of the remains float to the surface, and they can be eaten by seagulls? Like, what happens?
It is the first. I don't think
fish guts
propellers kill fish that regularly.
About as often as birds fly into wind turbines, I guess.
Fish are not stupid.
Birds are stupid?
Fish don't swim into propellers like that.
I wondered if they might get sucked into propellers.
No.
No?
Fish are people. I don't know. People.
Citat. Wow. Okay. All right.
They have their personality flaws, of course, but they are well adapted to their surroundings. They can breathe underwater.
That I can't fault. You're right. They do that. I can't argue with that.
And why do I sort of talk about how well adapted fish are? Because I'm now reading that is listening to a new book, or not a new book, but a new book for me, called Super Intelligence by Nick Bostrom.
I didn't, until you mentioned it, I didn't know about this. Tell me about it.
It is a book about super intelligence. And the different scenarios in which some sort of intelligent system or systems can surpass the human intelligence.
And when you say intelligent systems, you mean computers?
It could be. It mostly probably are, but yeah.
What about ants?
He talks about ants also. Hmm. But he talks about computational power and sort of different ways you can have a super intelligence. And I guess ants as a collective intelligence have, I don't remember the numbers, but they have a huge collective intelligence, but people or humans have a quality intelligence, because we can have culture and language and so on.
Well, ants have some kind of language, right? But like, there's this collective, right? It's systemic intelligence rather than individual.
They have a communication, but that is not the same as language. They don't have abstract ideas. Well, as far as we know.
Don't they? How do they communicate that there is food somewhere else, then?
That's a pretty simple signal. But they cannot communicate love or...
How do you know, man? Have you asked?
They don't have ant philosophers. Well, we assume by doing research and data and having social structures that supports the sort of embedment of knowledge over generations and so on. We haven't seen an ant university yet.
Title.
You haven't seen ants wearing togas and talk about epistemology. So, yeah. I haven't read it all the way through yet, so I guess it may conclude that ants are indeed the super intelligence that will be the end of us, but yeah.
Do you know about, does he talk about like the giant ant structure under like huge parts of Australia, like the size of ant? There's like a huge ant colony that I think runs for like hundreds of kilometers. Basically, it's basically all kind of interconnected.
Yeah, but it is in Australia, so I guess.
Yeah, well, everything in Australia is like going to bite you or kill you or maybe both. So yeah, they got the monopoly on that stuff.
Yeah, you saved me from a really, really racist joke there. Thanks.
Anytime. Just whatever, just, yeah, just...
So that's my culture pick of the week. A book.
You were inspired by it, though, like, to, well, in part, to pick up the thesis stuff again. What was it about it that made you...
No, just intelligent writing, I guess.
Okay. Made you want to do some of your own.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to take away from book. Cool. I think we've already had my cultural pick, which is kind of an anti-cultural pick of the week, which was Mamma Mia.
Yeah, and I guess you haven't seen any of the Trier movies yet.
No. Yeah, it's been kind of a week. And that was just like my, you know, personal life. Work was also a bit mad. Word of the week?
Word of the week.
All right, I'll go first. Tanchet. This is a word that I learned because Norwegians love to drill. So I have very bad teeth, which I inherited from both parents who had very bad teeth. And I spend in my life far too much time and far too much money paying people to fix my teeth when they do things that are not good. And this made me laugh a lot because my dentist... So Norwegians love drilling, right? God, does my dentist love drilling. Oh, my God, the amount of time. Like, you know, I had root canal over the summer, right? This is how much Norwegians love drilling. Yeah, you can make that face, yeah. I've had root canal before. This was longer than any previous dental surgery of any kind that I think I've had. Like, I was basically, like, she was sort of doing things with a drill in my mouth for the best part of an hour. It became kind of sad and painful. And then I was there last week, and I have to go back again. Yeah, my dentist just loves to drill. But, yeah, she was talking about gum sensitivity, and she said tannkjøtt, which means tooth meat or tooth flesh. And to me, this was very, very funny. Norwegians, like, you know, does actually have some complex abstractions, but a lot of words are just made by sticking two other words together, and this, the kind of the basicness of the word tooth meat just made me, after an hour in the chair, just basically made me lose my shit. So, yeah, tooth meat.
And what is that in English?
Gums.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, gum tissue.
Gum.
Gum. But yes, I was amused. Well, it was a bright spot in an otherwise fairly grim hour and a half, so, yeah. Drilling.
So, what is the statistician's favourite condiment?
Is this your word of the week?
Yeah.
Is this a joke in English or Norwegian?
In English.
I want it to be something about fish sauce because of the Poisson distribution, but let me think about that. Hang on.
So the regular way jokes go is that you say you don't know. If you actually guess it, it isn't funny because you steal my punchline.
Okay, yeah. I don't know. What is a statistician's favorite condiment?
No, I had to explain how jokes work.
A thing you maybe don't know about me is if you give me that kind of thing, I treat it as a riddle and I want to solve it. Okay, what is a statistician's favourite condiment?
By his knees.
What?
Okay, that didn't work.
You're right, that didn't work. Is that a Bayes joke?
Yeah. If you take mayonnaise and Bayes and merge them, Bayes knees.
That really doesn't work. It sounds like the bee's knees. Yeah. Did you make this up?
Yeah.
Never invent another joke. That's terrible.
Funny.
That's terrible. Yeah, I got nothing. All right, we should stop, like, forever. I can't even. That is... That is so terrible. Wow. You should be ashamed of yourself. You're clearly not, but you should be.
I think you, of all people, you should appreciate this joke.
I should. But, I do. The craftsmanship that went into that is admirable. I think the end result is needs some work, but I can't fault the logic. I can't. I'm just in my head. I'm trying to pronounce that.
Bay's knees.
Bee's knees. It's way too close to bee's knees.
How do you say it is mayonnaise, right?
Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise. So it could be
Bay's theorem. Mayonnaise.
It could be Bay's knees.
Are you thinking of béarnaise sauce? Which is arguably not a condiment.
Because I think this is a joke better read than mispronounced by a crazy Norwegian guy.
Yeah, it's true. Some jokes you just got
to
read.
Joke for the written word. Yep.
Right, for the written medium, yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't really designed to be spoken in the original.
Well,
I'm sorry,
back
I
to
don't
the
mean
drawing
to trash
board.
Your joke. I think so. Keep up the good work. I think it's hard to be funny in a second language, to be fair. God knows I fail at this many times
you.
A day. Sorry, that was pretty damning, wasn't it? I'm sorry.
You just continue to try to be not the straight cop. You're doing a swell job.
Being an asshole cop is what I'm being.
Right, so next time...
The story continues.
The story continues.
I have to talk next time also about the unreachable standard of interior decoration. Yeah. More on this, you know, next time.
More on this next week on Small Differences.
Right.
Yeah.
We should mention the website.
Yeah, we have a website where you can find the links and the contact form if you have any tips, suggestions, or criticisms.
After the last 2 weeks, I think heckling would be fair. I think you use the form to heckle, that's okay.
And where can people find the heckling form?
If you go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm, you will find the forum, you will find links from all the stuff that we've talked about that is linkable to, and a link to our Twitter account, smallforscheller, smaforskjeller, which is Small Differences in Norwegian. Hey, I spelled it right.
Yeah, can you use that in a sentence?
Smallforscheller. Vi snakker om vi bruker podcasten til å snakke om små forskjeller mellom Norge og Storbritannia. Kan vi si. There you go.
Yeah, cool. Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.